The war in Afghanistan, for so many U.S. soldiers who saw the worst of the combat, was a journey to a place they can never leave. Here's Navy SEAL Marcus Luttrell telling the story of watching a fellow soldier die.
They killed him. And I put my weapon down in a gunfight while my best friend was getting killed. So that pretty much makes me a coward.
How can you say that?
Say what?
That putting your weapon down makes you a coward.
Because that is a cowardice act, if you put your weapon down in a gunfight. They say every man has his breaking point. I never thought I'd find mine.
Marcus Luttrell on CBS's 60 Minutes. Luttrell not only found his breaking point, he discovered that there is no way to unbreak yourself after you come home. Similarly, Marine Corporal Clay Hunt was broken while a sniper in the 2nd Battalion, 7th Marine Regiment in Afghanistan. For a while, Hunt was a model for soldiers getting treatment for depression and PTSD. He became an advocate for aggressive treatment. He urged veterans to speak out about mental illness and to find a support network. But it was not enough. In March of 2011, he took his life after years of getting what his family described as less than adequate care at the Veterans Administration. He became another casualty of an unprecedented suicide rate in the 7th Marines, four times higher than the male veteran population at large. President Obama signed the Clay Hunt Suicide Prevention for American Veterans Act in February of 2015, and Richard Selke, Clay's stepfather, was there.
At the end of the day, when an individual makes the decision to take their life, they've given up hope. And so the message here is, please don't do that.
The troubling story of the 7th Marines and their attempts to watch each other's backs if the Veterans Administration can't has just been told in the New York Times by a reporter, David Phillips, who joins us now. Welcome, David.
Thanks for having me.
David, describe how you learned in your reporting that the suicide of one individual would haunt and almost reach out to other individuals, making them feel as though they were next.
I actually avoided writing about this for a long time because the data on it was so bad and was so misused. There's an often used statistic that 22 veterans kill themselves a day that you hear all over the place. And it's completely meaningless. It gives you no rate. It doesn't tell you who's at risk. All it does is make all veterans look like a bunch of victims. And that is absolutely not true. So I stayed away. And then one of Clay Hunt's best friends, a man named Jake Wood, I was talking with him about another story, and I asked him what I always ask when I'm doing reporting, which was, what should we be writing about that we're not? And he said suicide. And I probably literally rolled my eyes. I'm like, okay, here we go. He's going to give me the 22 suicides a day thing. And he said, look, all I know is we've had 12 guys in my unit kill themselves since I came back. And that was a huge number, huge number. And so that drove me to try and figure out what the story was.
And what is the story? How does it affect them all, even though one person makes the decision?
Well, you know, it's a human story. Like the clip you just ran, it's about guilt. It's about grief. It's about regret. These guys are no different from all of us in that they've gone to war and experienced both the best and the worst of humanity. And when they come home, it's very hard for them to figure out what to do with that. And some of them do go on to do amazing things, and others, they're unable to work through the trauma. And as their friends begin dying, they see it as a legitimate way out, a legitimate response.
Can you see it as a legitimate response?
No, because I've talked to too many of these guys who made serious attempts. I've talked to three guys in this one battalion who put a gun to their head and pulled the trigger and are still alive today. And whatever hole of despair they were in was temporary.
Why does treatment, effective treatment, seem to elude the Veterans Administration in cases like this, and particularly for these very traumatized veterans?
Well, it is not just the Veterans Administration. It's our society as a whole. I think we're at the very beginning of learning how to treat this in an effective way. You know, it was only a generation ago that we recognized war trauma as a legitimate injury.
And one particular story in your piece, again, about this experience haunting everyone else. This poor Marine carries with him the memories of stuffing the unidentifiable remains of one of his closest friends into a sleeping bag to get out of a horrible IED firefight. How do you get rid of something like that?
I don't know. That's for each individual to answer, right?
The veterans in this unit decided to help each other in a way that went way beyond what the VA was doing. Have they been effective in watching each other's backs?
So what they did is they created essentially a social network, a way that using online tools, they could watch out for each other if anyone was having problems, and then alert the closest Marine physically to them in their state and have them go see them in person. By their own account, it is a duct tape and chewing gum solution because they were at their wit's end. No one was coming to help them, so they had to help themselves. And it has had some success, but it's limited in what it can do. And these guys aren't professionals. They're just friends helping each other. And so they can't do it all by themselves.
How much do you think questioning the actual mission in Afghanistan contributes to this feeling of despair on the part of some of these soldiers?
I think to generalize would be difficult. Certainly men that I talked to, looking at what was gained compared to what was spent is very troubling to them. To lose people that they had the utmost respect for and now see that the same guys that they were fighting 5 years ago now completely control the area that they were fighting, I think is really demoralizing.
Is there anything you can say to them?
You know, I just don't think a lot of them feel like they fit anymore. I thought that they wouldn't want to talk to me. And I was amazed that dozens of them were willing and talked at length. And in ways that they hadn't ever spoken to even their families about. There wasn't space in our society to speak about. I think one of the things that bothers them most is that this was going on and no one seemed to care. You know, the VA didn't notice. They had been forgotten.
David Phillips is a reporter for our partner, The New York Times. His piece about the suicide rate of a particular unit in the Marines deployed to Afghanistan is a haunting account of precisely the mental illness that is a consequence of the Afghanistan war. David, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.